the name of the holiday, and there are actually some people who are careful not to call the holiday Chag, because they want to be overly technical. And Chag is a day that you bring a Korban Chagigah, so this is not a Chag technically, neither is Purim a Chag. I won't say Yom HaTzmaut is not a Chag, because people bring Korbanot on Yom HaTzmaut. But traditionally, people are not all that linguistically uptight, so I guess people do call it Chag, and people say Chag Sameach and Chag HaChanukah, but it's just pointing out technically it's not correct. But what exactly is the essence of this holiday? And I strongly suspect that depending at which time in history you happen to live, and I know that most of us live at this time, but depending at which time in history you happen to live, then you may very well look at the holiday in a slightly different light. And without any further introduction, let's start first by noting the headline. Ma'os Tzur Yeshuati L'chana El L'Shabeach Tikun Beit Tefilati V'Sham Todan Nizabeach, which is, if you know, there is a Korban which is brought on that Chanukah. Why was the Korban brought? Because they completed the Beit HaMikdash, but it was the normal Korban, Korban Todah. L'Eitachin Matbeach Mitzad HaMenabeach Azag Mor Bishir Mizmor Chanukat HaMizbeach. And on that day, what was completed? The Chanukat HaMizbeach, which is interesting because the focus over here is a very clear focus. The focus of Chanukah, it's not independent, oh, Chanukah or Chanukah, Cafe, and so on. It's Chanukat HaMizbeach. It is the how do you say Chanukah in English? Dedication of the Mizbeach. Chanukat HaMizbeach. That is what we actually sing in the Ma'os Tzur, and that is actually quite technically correct. Let's take a look at, and this is really the starting point. This is the primary rabbinic source that we have that speaks about Chanukah. Almost everybody who says anything about Chanukah does not use this source, rather they use the Rambam, because the Rambam goes into much, much more detail and includes things which are not said over here. But this is the source in the Gemara in Shabbat, Daf Kaf Aleph. The context over here is the second parak of Shabbat, which is known as the parak called Bameh Madlikin. What are you allowed to use for your Shabbat candles? What kind of fuel and what kind of wicks and so on and so forth? And then in the course of the discussion, unsurprisingly, the Gemara makes an analysis and says, hold it, is the same thing true about Chanukah? What about lighting Chanukah candles? Is it the same kind of wicks, the same kind of consideration, same kind of fuel, and so on and so forth? Which means the Gemara, as it normally does, where it moves laterally and makes comparison and contrasts, finds it quite natural to start bringing up Chanukah. And in the middle of the discussion on the Chanukah, the Gemara then asks the following either completely innocent question or completely uninnocent question. And the Gemara says, my Chanukah. My, of course, is Aramaic, and my means ma. It says, my Chanukah. So what exactly is this Chanukah? Now, is it that the Gemara has no idea what Chanukah is, or the Gemara knows exactly what Chanukah is, but the question is a strange question. Now, when the Gemara asks a question like this, the first thing that we should do to our, you know, in our own minds is to say, okay, now what answer would I give? Would I have given to that question? So without reading any further, if somebody asked me what Chanukah is, then what answer do I give? And that answer itself could be very, very different depending on which time in history that you live, on what exactly will be your focus of that answer. Yes? So what answer would you give? So we'll read the Gemara, and then you can tell me afterwards if that's exactly what you would have said. Tanur Rabbanan, as the rabbis taught. Now, the quote over here that it's taking this from, it's taking from an ancient rabbinic source which is known as Megillat Ta'anit. Megillat Ta'anit is a list of Second Temple holidays, the vast majority of which are no longer holidays for us today, which means there were dates in that calendar that they just don't mean anything to us today. Days when certain people died, days when certain things happened, and so on and so forth. So Megillat Ta'anit, the Gemara tells us, has fallen into disuse. There is it's no longer binding in any way. It was at one point binding, today it's no longer binding, but there are a couple of things in Megillat Ta'anit which are still binding, and what are those? Well, for example, Chanukah and Purim are listed in Megillat Ta'anit. So again, this is a really old Jewish source, Second Temple lists of important days. The Torah Rabbanan Besrim L'chamisha B'Kislev, the rabbis taught the 25th day of Kislev, Yomei D'Chanukah Timnaya Inan. There are 8 days of Chanukah. D'lo L'mispad B'hon, and it just now gave us a really minimalistic description of something which is important in terms of a holiday. It says that if, God forbid, somebody passes away, you do not make a eulogy on that day. So therefore, you know, the tension is, what type of a holiday is Hanukkah? Again, this could have been a whole other talk, more of a halachic talk. What kind of holiday should be? For that matter, what kind of holiday should Purim be? Should it be a holiday that you're not allowed to do melacha? Should it be kind of holiday which expresses itself in things you can't do, things that you have to do, and so on and so forth? I mean, Hanukkah is interesting in the sense that even Purim has an obligation of having a seudah. You know, normally in terms of Shabbat and Yom Tov, we have mitzvah of Se'udah. So even Purim as a Se'udah, Hanukkah is the one time that there's really not a Se'udah in terms of a Se'udah mitzvah, even though there are those who say, but if you have a Se'udah, then it's considered to be a Se'udah mitzvah, but it's really not one of an obligation as much as that to have a Se'udah would be something which would be a nice thing to do. But so again, the tension of how much of a holiday should Hanukkah be does exist. And don't tell me that the reason that it would be, and Purim would be more lenient in terms of there's no Issur Melacha, is because it's a rabbinic holiday. There are rabbinic holidays that people don't do any work, and those perhaps we have forgotten a long time ago, but that's called Yom Tov Sheni. Yom Tov Sheni is absolutely a holiday in terms of you can't do malacha and so on. It's a completely rabbinic day. It's a carbon copy of the Torah day, but it is a rabbinic carbon copy. Over here, the rabbis could have said, for example, the first day and the last day of Hanukkah, or Purim, that all of these could have been, you know, Purim, how far is Purim? We say that the Jews accept the Torah, keep of the Kiblu. Maybe Purim should have been just like Chag HaShavuot and should have been one day not to do Malacha. And for that matter, I could say, we don't know why yet, but I could say that maybe Hanukkah should be 8 days. It should be similar to Sukkot, considered with Simchat Torah, and the first day and the last day you shouldn't do Malacha. Which means that if Chazal would have said that, none of you would have been sitting here and saying, hold it a second, why do we have a rabbinic holiday called Hanukkah and Purim that we don't do Malacha? Meaning that the fact it's rabbinic shouldn't surprise us. Quite the opposite is true, is that when they try to create rabbinic holidays, more often than not, we do try to parallel them at some point based upon some kind of a Torah source or Torah holiday. But I will mention that there is one thing which is unique about Hanukkah compared to all the other holidays, and that is that Hanukkah is the only holiday where the events that took place in the land of Israel. It's the only Zionist holiday. If you think about it, Pesach, obviously not. Shavuot, Matan Torah, Sukkot, was in the desert. Purim is outside. The only holiday that we have which records events that took place in the land of Israel is Hanukkah, and that itself is interesting. And if my class will be as uninteresting, I think it will be the only thing that you'll be able to repeat afterwards and remember. It's always the goal. So the first thing we're told is, now we realize how what kind of a minimal law this is. You can't have a eulogy on this day. Udololit anot bahon. And you can't fast on this day. So therefore, as far as what kind of holiday is Hanukkah, okay, there's no eulogies, no fast days, but again, that's not a real expression of a holiday that we're used to. Shekishenichnasu yevanim lehichal, for when the Greeks went into the temple, timu kol hashmanim shebehichal, they desecrated or defiled all of the oil within, and when the kingdom of the Maccabees, or Hashmanaim, were victorious, but could they search for Lomatsu Elapachad Shel Shemin, they searched and they only found one oil. There is another ancient rabbinic source found in the She'iltot that says they didn't find even, meaning they found one, but it wasn't enough to light even one day. It was a really, really small thing. So therefore, according to that She'iltot, the miracle was all 8 days, even the first day that it lit. Shaya mona b'chot Moshe Kohen Gadol, munach b'chot Moshe Kohen Gadol, and it had on it the seal of the Kohen Gadol, v'lo hayabo ela lahadlik yom echad, sorry, that's where, lo hayabo ela lahadlik, lo hayabo afilu lahadlik is the She'iltot, sorry. Even one day, Na'ase Bones, a miracle took place, v'hidliko mimenu shmoneh amim, and it lasted for 8 days. And by the way, that's a fair question to ask. What if somebody lights candles on the first day and it lasts 8 days? Did they do the mitzvah of Hanukkah or not? Well, I don't think they did the mitzvah, but it would be pretty impressive anyway. Now, so far, what did the Gemara say, what it didn't say? Well, it mentioned the war, and it mentioned the miracle. The war was just mentioned really in passing. It did not sound like had there only been a military victory, we would have the holiday. It sounds like, oh, when we happened to win that war, and then oil was found, and then the oil lasted for 8 days, that's why we have a holiday, Lishana Acheret, and that itself is absolutely fascinating. Lishana Acheret, what does that mean literally? In some subsequent year, I don't even know if it's the next year, I don't know if it's 5 years, I don't know if it's 10 years, I don't know if it's 50 years. Lishana Acheret, in another year, subsequent year, Kavun, they established it, Va'asuim Yomim Tovim Ba'lo Voda'a. They created it a day which will be, day again, Yomim Tovim, good days. But what kind of good days? Again, it didn't say Isu Malacha. By the way, you'll also notice it didn't say lighting Chanukah candles. It said Bahalel Uvhoda'a. And therefore, the main aspect of Chanukah is Halel Bahoda'a. And the question is how exactly we express that. Now, the Gemara over here, clearly black and white, speaks about the miracle that took place. It speaks about the war. You'll hear people saying silly things about this, as if the Gemara didn't say anything about it. It did. The Gemara talked about the war and talked about the miracle. The Gemara talks about the creation of the holiday. And as far as the question is, so what is Chanukah? So that's the Gemara's answer. What is Chanukah? Now, you all recognize the Gemara could have spoken much more about the military battles. So I'll give you three or four different reasons why the Gemara would not do this. First is that on a historical level, there was some element of a civil war within Chanukah, which means there were groups of Jews who were the Maccabees or the Hashmonaim. There were also groups of Jews who were the Mityavnim. There were battles and struggles within the Chanukah story of Jew killing Jew, which means, yes, it ends up escalating to the point that the Greeks are there in the Greek army, but the Greek army was brought in because the Mityavnim were the ones who riled them up and talked about the Jews who were rebelling, which means once you have elements of a civil war, it becomes a little bit inappropriate to celebrate or commemorate a civil war. So therefore, the first suspicion is that had there only been a military victory, that would not have necessarily been a sufficient reason to have created a holiday. Second thing is that the Greeks themselves believed in might, they believed in power, they believed in, you know, in their games and so on and so forth. So it could be that by celebrating the military victory, we would be playing right into the Greek hands. It's as if, can you imagine 2,500 years ago, if somebody would have told the Hashmonaim who were just victorious, well, don't worry, in 2,500 years, there'll be a basketball team called Maccabi Tel Aviv, and there'll be sports games called the Maccabiah, and there'll be a beer called Maccabi, but you guys really won. So it could be that they say, no, that's just not possible. There's no way that anybody can possibly twist around what the victory was of the Hashmonaim against the Greeks and against Greek culture to speak about Maccabiah games, which would be a Jewish or a kosher somehow version of the Olympics. Because that's, I mean, again, from the Maccabee perspective, that would have been just completely sacrilege and impossible to imagine. So, of course, we have better imaginations than they do, so we can well imagine it. But that may be another reason why they were not necessarily prepared to focus on the military victory itself. A third reason that we can speak about is also something which the Gemara does go into a bit, and this may or may not be part of a larger question, and that is, why is there so little information in the Gemara about Chanukah? So here's an unfair question that to some people seems like a very fair question, and then it leads to all kinds of suspicions of bias and so on. Right? There's a Masechta, there is a Gemara, an order, that deals with Megillah, that deals with all the laws of Purim. There is none that deals with Chanukah. So why should there be a difference? By the way, I can ask the same question. Why is there a book within the canon which deals with the Megillah, Megillat Esther, and why don't we have a book in the canon that deals with the book, which deals with the story of Chanukah? So now, are both of those questions the same question, or and are both of those questions fair questions? So it may well be that they're not really fair questions. For example, if the canon was really made or suggested or almost made, because these things are subject to question, but was it made already by the Anshei Knesset HaGdola? When Anshei Knesset HaGdola say in Pirkei Avot, Vasu Siag LaTorah, put a fence around the Torah, do they mean that we should be making fences around individual laws, or do they mean to make a canon? Which books are included within Tanakh and which books are not considered within Tanakh? Also, if you keep in mind that the beginning of the Second Temple is when prophecy came to an end. So all the books that we have were basically on some level other prophetic books. So therefore, and of course you can start asking me questions about Purim and about Megillat Esther, but if the beginning of the Second Temple, we have the Anshei Kesedola who create the canon, so then you can ask me, hold it, why weren't any books put in afterwards? Well, very simple reason. Prophecy came to an end, so there are no longer any other candidates that you can put in. So therefore, why is there a Megillat Esther and there's no Megillat Hanukkah is not really necessarily a fair question. On the other hand, in terms of the Mishnah, it could be the same kind of thing, or you can say, no, these are different. But again, the Mishnayot that we have, when is the earliest core of those Mishnayot, and when was the last time that a new Mishnah, a whole new book, was added? So I'm saying, I'm leaving this as open questions. Some say that this is all related to a third aspect, and the third aspect is the degree that Chazal were ultimately upset with the Chashmonaim. And the reason is that the Chashmonaim ended up leading the military victory, but then, after they won the war, they held on to the not just the religious leadership, and they were Kohanim, they also took over the political leadership, and they declared themselves kings. Which means that's something which Chazal feel was something completely inappropriate. The best place to look at this is to look at the Ramban in Parshat Vayechi, on Lotos or Shevet Yehuda, the scepter, should never depart from the hands of Yehuda, and then the Ramban goes into a whole discussion how the Maccabees sinned a terrible sin by holding on to the kingship, and eventually they became corrupt. Eventually the Maccabees became corrupt, and eventually they were all wiped out, to the point that the Gemara ends up saying that if anybody today says, and this is today 2,000 years ago, if anybody today says that they are from the family of the Maccabees, you should know that they are a slave, because none of the people survived. Only the slaves from the family ended up surviving, so that there was a very strong distaste in terms of the Maccabees and how the story ended up. So that may have something to do as well with the lack of discussion within Chazal that we find about Hanukkah. So those are three different reasons not to talk about the war, not to talk about victory. On the other hand, what it does focusing on the holiday of lights, the festival of lights, the idea of the miracle that took place, that would seem to be, as far as the Gemara is saying, what is Hanukkah? Well, the reason we have Hanukkah is because there was a miracle of lights. And had there not been a miracle of lights, we can argue if we really would be commemorating today this particular military victory, especially knowing how the story ends up afterwards. The whole context over here in the Gemara is about lighting candles, but over here asking, what is Hanukkah? So now I have to ask myself again, when it says, what is Hanukkah, does it have no idea what Hanukkah is? It knows what Hanukkah is, but it's telling you what we should think Hanukkah is. By the way, on the other hand, in Al HaNisim, it doesn't say anything about the miracle either. In the Al HaNisim, it talks about the military victory and the many against the few and the pure against the impure and so on and so forth. Which bracha is it by in the Amidah? And which bracha is it by the Birkat HaMazon? Nodelecha, lahalel ulahoda'ah. So whenever we're doing hoda'ah, right, nodelecha, or within the Amidah where we have the hoda'ah, when we're giving thanks, so then we have to again give thanks for all the things that happened. I mean, one of the things we have to give thanks for is the fact that we survived and the fact that we were victorious and the fact that we are alive. Let's think this through for one second, as hard as it is to think about it. Which is more important, the military victory or the miracle? So there's no question in the world that the military victory is more important. Why? Because if there would not have been a military victory, but there would have been a miracle of lights, would it be celebrating? No. If there was a military victory, but no lights. So then the point is here. You would think that maybe there should be a holiday. So that's the whole point the Gemara is saying. No, even though the military victory is more important, that was not the reason to create the holiday. So that seems to be the agenda that it has. And when I gave a couple of different possibilities, obviously when you have different possibilities, these are not mutually exclusive, and it could be a number of these different possibilities. Years and years ago, probably almost 70 years ago, there's an article written, did the sages, by Gedaliahu Eilon, who was a professor in Hebrew University, did the sages cause the Maccabeans to be forgotten from history? Which means, is there an agenda over here? The fact that there really is so little, so is that said about Hanukkah and about the Chashmonaim and about the war, is that really part of some kind of an expression against the Maccabees and against, and if, again, if you want to then be a little bit more paranoid and add in a little more politics, the fact that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi from the family of David is the one who ends up editing the Mishnah, so then you can start asking questions like, were there more Mishnayot, and were they wiped out, were they forgotten, which is an approach that I don't think is necessarily valid whatsoever, but that'll at least give you a taste what academics keep themselves busy with. Yes. Yeah, it's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah Daf Chet, and that's what we're not going to talk about today. It talks about a holiday of at the end, a solstice holiday. Is that the solstice? Is that the solstice? Yeah. So it does speak about that, and it talks about how going all the way back to Adam, and there's a whole thing. There's a lot to talk about. Bli Neder, some other time if you like. Okay. I wrote about it. Why Yehol Benun? In my book on holidays, I have a chapter on that. Okay. But Yehol Benun did write about this. He sent me his new book. He quoted me in it, and then he went looking, because I wrote him once, and he quoted me in the book, so he looking for my address, and he found it, and he sent me the book with a nice inscription, so he's very much a mensch. He said, not only the chapter I quoted, he goes, the rest of it's good also, so... Okay, let's continue. In source number 2, which Sefer Yochsan, which quotes ancient sources, Vayasu Chanukata Mizbeach B'Chodesh Kislev B'Kofet Yom Bo. So I just want to again focus on the Chanukata Mizbeach. The Mizbeach seems to be the focus, and not just the idea of the lights. V'yisimu et lechem aponim v'yedliku haneirot v'nasa neis gadol b'shemen k'mo shekiblu rabotenu, and so on, as it says in Perek Mebadlikin, what we just now read. But again, it's interesting, it's just taken as a given, that Chanukah means Chanukata Mizbeach. Take a look for a second in source number 7. This is Rabbi Soloveitchik. V'nitan lomar sheshona ha-mizbeach mishar klei ha-mikdash. The mizbeach, the altar, is different from all the other parts of the Beit HaMikdash. Shurubi b'ayit sheni haya mikdash b'li aron kodesh. V'nir mizek kishar ha-kelim ein ma'akvim mehechshar ha-mikdash. That in the second Beit HaMikdash they were missing all kinds of things compared to the first Beit HaMikdash, but the one thing that they had was the Mizbeach, and that's the one thing which is non-negotiable. If you're missing the Mizbeach, then you don't have a Mishkan. On the other hand, if you have it, then you do have it. And two lines from the bottom, Ki etzem kedushat ha-mishkan u-mikdash talui ba-mizbeach. That the Torah itself, when it speaks about the completion of the Mishkan, it's known as the Chanukat HaMizbeach. So, again, I think it's very obvious to you why we just now read this source, because this idea of Chanukat HaMizbeach is not some, you know, accident. It's no, that is what the Mishkan or the Beit HaMikdash is. You can have a Beit HaMikdash missing, right? It could be missing all kinds of things to it, and it's still, quote-unquote, kosher as a Mishkan or a Beit HaMikdash. There's only one thing which is non-negotiable, and that one thing is the Mizbeach, and therefore, what is it called in the Torah? When they complete the Mishkan, what does he tell us? That's called Chanukat HaMizbeach. Chanukat HaMizbeach is the idea. So, of course, you know, in our minds, we do have to ask ourselves the question, so therefore, what exactly is this Chanukah and this holiday of Chanukah and in terms of the Chanukah to Mizbeach? Let's go back a second, and I think that this is going to give us a bit more insight. Source number 3. Exactly, that's what we're about to, exactly what we're going to read. Excellent. Perfect. Source number 3 is, before we get to Ezra, we get to Moshe and Shlomo. Right? First Moshe. So this is the completion of the Mishkan. This is the very last couple of verses in Sefer Shemot. Sefer Shemot comes to an end and the Mishkan is completed. You notice the Mizbeach there. Yerachatzuk ha-shetzivat Hashem et Moshe. V'yakam et ha-chatzer saviv le-mishkan v'la-mizbeach v'yiten et masach shar ha-chatzer v'yachal Moshe et ha-melacha. Everything is put up, everything is finished, and now Moshe has completed le-melachat ha-mishkan. The Mishkan is done. What happens when it's done? Pasuk Lamed Dalet. V'yichas ha'anan et ohel moed. Suddenly the cloud comes and encompasses the ohel moed. U'kvod Hashem malei et ha'mishkan. And the glory of God fills up the Mishkan. Which, by the way, we have no idea what that means. And it sounds like two different elements. One element is the cloud and the other element is the kvod Hashem. But whatever it is, it sounds pretty impressive. It's impressive in the sense that we have man reaching out to God, or if you want to use terms of man in search of God, now God returns back to man, and we have some kind of a divine dance that takes place over here, where man does his action and God responds. So whatever this is, that the glory was so intense that Moshe couldn't even enter, and so on and so forth, and that leads us to the very end of Sefer Shemot. So how does Sefer Shemot end? That the Mishkan is now operational. Now it's ready. It works. But what's important to us is that man builds it, and then there's a divine response. That's what's important. In Sefer Divrei HaYamim, we have a description of the first Beit HaMikdash, and we have a very similar description. Ukichalot, you notice like the similar words even. The Vayachal Moshe, et HaMalacha, and here, Ukichalot Shlomo Litpalel, Shlomo gets up, he makes it, and then he prays, which, by the way, some of this should perhaps be similar to what we find in Parshat Shmini. What happens in Parshat Shmini? Vayehi b'yom ha-shmini. Shmini of what? What is Shmini of? The eighth day of the consecration. Of the Chanukah dedication. Of the Chanukat HaMizbeach. It's the eighth day of the dedication. What happens then? So we're told that Aaron gets up and nothing happens. Moshe gets up and says a prayer, and what happens? Fire comes down, and what does it light up? The Mizbeach. So again, we have the Mizbeach responding, fire coming down. So that is the further description of when very specifically, the prayers and then the fire coming down. Source number 4 describes the first Beit HaMikdash. Ukichalot Shlomo litpalel, v'ha'esh yerdam min ha'shamayim, v'tochal ha'olah v'zvachim. So therefore, a fire comes down, where does that fire go? This should be quite obvious at this point. Once again, the fire goes down to the Mizbeach. So now already, after two times of saying this, we realize the glory of God comes in, the Shekhinah is there, we have a fire coming down of heaven, going to the Mizbeach comes operational. What do we now all know? That the Mizbeach is the key of the Mishkan or the Beit HaMikdash. The Mizbeach has what we can call now, I don't know, how would you call it? A divine, a divine response, a divine involvement. God is involved in the Chanukat HaMizbeach. And then how does it continue? Pasuk Bet there in source 4. V'lo yuchlu akonim levo Beit Hashem ki malei kvod Hashem et Beit Hashem. So what does that remind you of? Exactly what we read, but when the Mishkan. So far, the completion of the Mishkan and the completion of the first Beit HaMikdash both have very, very similar elements. In source number 5, we have a little bit from Ezra, but this is Perek Vav. Here it says in the second line there, Vavdu b'nei Yisrael kohanaya v'levaya ushar b'nei galuta chanukat beit eloka dina b'chedva. They did the whole chanukat habayit, but we're not told that much detail about it. But in source number 3, we're told a little bit more detail. Sorry, source number 6, which is Perek Gimel. V'yistu habonim et heichal Hashem. They finished building the heichal. V'yamidu kohanim u'bushim b'chatzotrot v'levim b'nei asaf b'mitziltayim lahalel et Hashem yidei David melech Yisrael v'yanu b'halel u'vodot l'Hashem kitov kili lamchasto al Yisrael v'chol ham hiriu trua gdola b'halel l'Hashem al husad beit Hashem. Which means they complete it, they start singing, they're saying the psalms, they're saying Tehillim, they're saying Halel, everybody's happy, kili lamchasto. Pasuk Yud Bet. Rabim me'akohanim v'leviim v'roshei avot v'azakenim asher ra'u et bayit harishon b'yasdo zeh habayit be'eineihem bochim b'kol gadol. And all of the old-timers who still remember the first Beit HaMikdash, they all start to cry. B'kol gadol v'rabim, and other people, b'trua b'simcha l'rim kol. And other people are so excited, this is great. V'ein ha'am akirim kol trua simcha l'kol b'chi ha'am. So what's interesting about this description? Well, there's actually two things that are interesting. The more interesting thing is what's not here. When the second Beit HaMikdash is completed, what are we missing? So again, this, if we would have started here, we would not have noticed it. But now we know what we were looking for. We were looking for what? We were looking for God's response. We were looking for the fire to come down. We were looking for God's glory to fill up the place. We were looking for something. So what happens? They finish the building, and all the young people, wow, look at this. We built the Beit HaMikdash. We completed it. We're successful. And they all start to celebrate. And all the old-timers are just looking, and they all start to cry because they realize what's not there. They realize that when it comes to the completion of the second Beit HaMikdash, the Shekhinah just did not seem to come back. Now, if you want to look at this within the larger context in Sefer Ezra and the way the Gemara understands it, it's for a very simple reason. And the simple reason is that the vast majority of Jews decided not to come back and build it. Only 40,000 Jews came back to build it. A very small percentage were there. Most of the Jews decided to stay in the Galut, to stay in the diaspora. So basically God seems to be saying, and this is really the words of the Gemara, so, you know, you don't want to come home. I'm not coming home. You know, you're not there. So why should I go and extend myself if you guys are not even bothering? Which may or may not be fair to those who did come, because those who did come, maybe they should get some kind of divine response. But as I said, that, you know, when we get to this point, we understand the mixed emotions that were expressed over there. It's wonderful comparing to have no Beit HaMikdash, but on the other hand, it's very disappointing compared to what we had before. And that perspective we only could have gotten had we seen here what we see. Now, I just want to pause here for a moment and have our first conclusion. And it may very well be that what we read in our first source, that Ulashana Acheret, in some subsequent year, when they began to contemplate what was the theological significance of this miracle that took place, they came to this conclusion that if there's a miracle with fire taking place in the Beit HaMikdash, so maybe this should be interpreted the same way as the Chanukat HaMizbeach of the Mishkan and the Chanukat Mizbeach of the first Beit HaMikdash, which means as far as they're concerned, when does the divine response take place? There is a long delay from the day that with Ezra they build it till this miracle of light takes place. Now, that, as I said, may have been the Gemara is interesting because the Gemara says Lashana Acheret, that it took time to understand it. We don't necessarily always understand the significance of certain events in our lives when they happen, when they took place. And this is a point which I heard from Rav Soloveitchik on this Lashana Acheret. He said there could be certain things both to the individual and to a nation that at the moment they take place, we don't understand the significance. Which means how many of us, the moment that we met our spouse-to-be, did we realize at that particular moment that this was the person? It could be you did, it could be, I should ask. No response. So did we realize the significance at that particular moment, or only in retrospect later on did we realize what that moment meant? So over here, Lashana Acheret is such an interesting point, which means it could be that they did not make it into a holiday immediately. Again, that's what it sounds like from the Gemara. Could have been the next year, as I said, could have been 10 years. But this seems to move in. And it also could be that this miracle of the lighting that took place was not necessarily all that well known. And by the way, there may be reasons to publicize it, and there may have been reasons not to publicize it. The best reason not to publicize it may have been what I'd said earlier, is that as time goes on and the kingdom of the Chashmonaim become more and more distasteful within the regular non-aristocratic Jews, again, they ended up becoming the corrupt Kohanim that they were fighting against. I mean, you understand this? The Chashmonaim became their own enemies down the line. Originally, they came to fight against the corrupt Kohanim who had become Hellenized, and they themselves end up becoming the corrupt Kohanim who end up holding on to the power. So it may have actually been not within the interest, as long as there were Chashmonaim around, to have spoken about a miracle, to publicize the miracle, to talk about how the hand of God may be within the Chashmonaim whatsoever. What's good about what I'm saying now is that when certain people hear this later on, I will be accused of apologetics, but it's very, very good apologetics. So let's continue, because there are a couple of things that I happen to know that in terms of the way that it's reported historically. So for example, I have in front of me a book, which I guess I only take out every couple of years. It's called Hasfarim HaChitzonim, which is the books which are not included within the canon. So over here, it does have the Book of Maccabees, not only Book of Maccabees 1, it's got Book of Maccabees 1, 2, 3, and 4. I got four different books of Maccabees. In the Book of Maccabees 1, it does not talk at all about any type of a miracle in terms of in terms of the miracle of lights that took place, and mainly focuses upon the battle and so on. The Book of Maccabees 2, though, is fascinating because you would have thought, actually you probably wouldn't, but you would have thought that whoever wrote this just listened in for the first half an hour of my class. Because what it does is it compares what happened now during the Hanukkah story with what happened when Moshe did the first Chanukah Habayit and what happens when Shlomo does the second Chanukah Habayit. It absolutely lined it up exactly the way that I lined it up. And by the way, that's not the reason I lined it up this way. I actually noticed this or re-noticed this much later, but it does the same thing because it's trying to understand it within the larger context. I'll just read a little bit. Ubiyotenu nechonim lasot bechodesh kislev b'chamisha ve'esrim et chag taharat hamikdash re'inu lahodiachem leman tasu gam atem chag asukot ve'esh kinechemya b'chalkulo az et hamikdash v'et hamizbeach hivizvachim ki kasher haglu avotenu l'paras v'lachu akonim yirei shemayim e'esh hamizbeach b'setev v'dmanua ba'omik be'er. And he starts talking about that the same thing happened in the times of Nehemiah, the same kind of thing happened. And then he goes on also, as I said, to talk about in the time of Moshe. I'm just skipping a little bit. In chapter 2, it says, Ukashert palo Moshe el Hashem v'yorda eish min ha-shamayim v'achlu et n'tachei ha-korban. Gam kin Shlomo hit palo v'yorda eish v'tochal et ha-olot. Which means over here, it's putting the Chanukah Habayit within the context of the other Chanukot Habayit which had taken place. Although there was one thing which is interesting along the line, which maybe you noticed or maybe you didn't, and that was that he compared it to Sukkot. He compared it to Sukkot and said, what in the world are they talking about Sukkot? And now let's go back to our sources. Source number 9, you have another thing from the Book of Maccabees. And this is later on. I was just now reading from Perek Aleph and Bet. So now is Perek Yud. Umi'et Hashem haitazot l'chate et habayit be'etzem hayom, to purify the Beit HaMikdash. It may have been written in Hebrew, but Hebrew did not survive. Only thing which survived is in Greek, and this is a retranslation back to Hebrew from the Greek. Be'etzem hayom hu asher tim'u et hagoyim v'hu yom ha'esrim v'chamisha l'yerech kislev v'yechogegu chag la'ashem shmonat yamim kimei chag ha'sukot. And they celebrated 8 days like the holiday of Sukkot. V'yizkeruot yamim mikedem mechagagam et chag haSukkot b'harim uvamarot. And obviously, during the time of Sukkot that year, when they didn't have the Beit HaMikdash yet, they could not celebrate Sukkot. So what's telling us is that first Hanukkah became a Sukkot replacement. V'yitanu v'yishim. Okay, so skip v'yichu arvei nachal v'kafot tmarim. V'yashir shir shevach v'odah l'Hashem asher natan lam oz v'tshuva l'tahir et Beit Mikdasho. V'yavir kol b'chol yirei Yehuda l'chog et hachag hazeh midei shana b'shana. So the way that the holiday was celebrated was they celebrated as a Sukkot replacement, and that seems to be as good of an answer as you can have is why they made it 8 days. They made it 8 days because it's like Sukkot. Now there are certain people who will then make a big deal about what it says over here, but completely ignore what it said in the earlier chapters. The earlier chapter absolutely saw this as not just a replacement of Sukkot, they saw this as a continuation of what happened during the time of Moshe and the time of Shlomo, when a fire did come down. There is a claim there that the same thing happened in the time of Nehemiah also, which is pretty interesting. But it's implied that when it happened by Nehemiah, it's implied that it happened also on the 25th day of Kislev, which I'm going to come back to. Yeah. They didn't have a Beit HaMikdash for Sukkot that year, so they missed Sukkot. So what do you do when you miss Sukkot? You know, if you miss Pesach, you have Pesach Sheni. So it seems to be from this source, and say from Akabim, that there seems to be some kind of understanding that Hanukkah and Sukkot are somehow connected. Take a look at the Psikta now in source number 10. Magalu ma'asecha Hashem, mahu ma'od amku ma'achshivotecha, God's thoughts are deep. Amar Rabbi Chanina, be'esrim v'chamisha b'kislev, nigmara melechet ha'mishkan. This is talking about in the desert. This midrash, and it's not the only one, is telling us that the date, the 25th of Kislev, is a significant date. As I said, the book of Maccabees hinted or pointed that the 25th of Kislev is when Nehemiah already did his dedication. Over here, it's saying is that when was the Mishkan completed? On the 25th day of Kislev. By the way, the question is when it started, and hold on to that for a second. It was completed on the 25th day of Kislev, va'asa mikupal al echad b'nisan. But they folded it up and put it in storage until the first day of Nisan. Shekima Moshe echad b'Nisan kema shekatuv v'yom ha'chodesh ha'rishon b'echad ha'chodesh takim mishkan o ha'moed. Because specifically what day was he told to put it together? He put it together on the first day of Nisan. So you would have thought that when did they finish it? They finished on the last day of Adar. And God said, go put it together. No. The Mishkan was completed on the 25th day of Kislev. V'kol zman she'em mekupal Yisrael mimal milin al Moshe lomar. Lama lo hukam Miyad, Shem Adofi Irabo, Shechashav Larev Samchat HaMishkan, Bechodesh Nolad Bo Yitzchak. So it says the people got very, very nervous and very anxious. They said, no, why are we not doing this yet? What's the matter? What's the matter with us? Maybe God doesn't really want us. Maybe God's rejected us. Remember the background of the whole story is that we sort of made a golden calf along the way, and God may have a reason not necessarily to be pleased with us. So the people, you know, think, okay, we can build the Mishkan and fix everything. We can fix the relationship, and God doesn't seem to want it yet. But the answer that the Midrash gives, no, God wanted to wait for the month that Yitzchak was born in, the month that Yitzchak, which is Pesach, right, Nisan, the month that Yitzchak was born in. By the way, remember another thing: Yitzchak was the first person who was ever put on an altar. When I say first person, not just first person, that when Avraham built his various altars, he never put anything on a Mizbeach. The first thing that Avraham ever put on a Mizbeach was Yitzchak. So somehow, on some level, the month that Yitzchak is born, somehow connected to the Mishkan, becomes a little bit more interesting than perhaps we would have imagined. Shebenisa nolad Yitzchak, uminayin, and again goes into this whole interpretation. Turn over to page 3. Umeata, on the top of page 3, the Midrash continues, Hivsid Kislev. Kislev lost out on what it should have had as a holiday. Shenigmura melachavo, that was when the melacha was completed. Lav mehavetashlum, amar kodesh baruchu, alay l'shalem lo. God says, I'm good for it, I'll pay you back later. Mashilem lo, hakodesh baruchu, chanukat beit chashmonai. That the Hanukkah of the chashmonayim, when they will make the dedication of the Mishkan, because av shlomo gorbar melachat Mishkan b'chodesh mar cheshvan. And on Mar Cheshvan is when Shlomo finished building it. B'shnachat, Asura b'yerech bul kalat habayit, as it says in Sefer Melachim, Mahu b'yerech bul b'yerech shevi Hakadosh Baruch Hu et hamabul v'nase naul shneim asar chodesh v'ayu akol memalin al Shlomo lama lo bana shebna shebat sheva, the son of Batsheva, who hech Hakadosh Baruch Hu misheresh chinato l'toch masei yadav ve'lokim chashav la'arev simchat beit hamikdash b'chodesh shenolad bo Avraham b'yerech ha'itanim zeo chodet Tishrei. And that's why the first Beit HaMikdash was finished beforehand, but the consecration again was delayed and didn't take place. So again, this Midrash is pretty interesting, by the way. According to this, the third Beit HaMikdash will end up being built in Mar Cheshvan, just in case, because God still owes Mar Cheshvan something, and that's why right now Mar Cheshvan is the only holiday that doesn't have, only month that doesn't have a holiday, so that's the holiday that it's going to end up getting, will be the Binyan, or the Chanukah Tabayit, of Bayit Shlishi. So at least from this we have a sense when the first Mishkan was completed, but we don't know yet when it was started. So let's move back a little bit. There's a famous question which is repeated, if you ever wanted to see who said it, it's in the source 11, it's in the Tor. The Tor asks, why is Sukkot in the fall? Sukkot should be in the spring. If Sukkot is because the Jews left Egypt and they lived in tents, it should be in the spring. And he gives his famous answer, which is clear that he did not live in the Middle East. And what did he say? V'sukkot shamar katuv shashivenu behem heman ne'akavot shekifu behem Laval Yakebahem Sharav Shemesh Vizgmalazat Sivan Lasot Sukot Kadesh and Iskor Nifla Otav and Aratav, the Alpha Pishiat Sanu Mitzrayim Bechodesh Nisan, Lot Sivan Lasot Sukot Botoazman, the Fishu Yimota Kayet, Vider Koladam Lasot Sukalatzel, Veloitani Kerat Asiatenu Behem Shahim Bimitzvat Taborayit Barach, Ulachain Sivatonish and the Sebachodesh Shvish, whose man Agishamim, Vider Kodam Latsate Misukato Leshev Beveto, Vanachni Yotim and Abayat Leshev Bisuka, Bezeyrelakol, Shemitzota Melachi Alenu Lasotat. Beautiful answer that he gives, which is clear that he did not live in this climate, or maybe this is really a sign of global warming, but in the Middle East, it's actually very nice to sit out in a sukkah this time of year. If you live in Cleveland, it's not a very nice time to sit in a sukkah. If you lived, I suspect, in certain places in Poland, he lived in Germany, then moved to Spain, so it may not have been the nicest time of year. But the answer is very interesting, is that, why is Sukkot in the fall? Because it's not a nice time to sit outside. Well, it's not a nice time to sit outside. Guess what happens? Like when we were growing up in Brooklyn, and anybody who had the audacity to build a sukkah on a roof generally didn't stay there for 8 days, or it generally, like, you'll find it a couple blocks away or something. And Sukkot doesn't work that well in the diaspora. So the Vilna Gaon has a completely different answer to this question. In source number 12, and this is the Gra's commentary to Shir HaShirim, so if you ever wanted to see where this is, or if you never heard it before, then you didn't necessarily want to see it. But listen to what the Vilna Gaon writes. He's talking about the very beginning, Mashcheni Acharecha, right? God pulls us towards him. End of the first line. Pasuk HaGimel HaShlishi Hu Neged Binyan HaMishkan Shekrivu Shivim Parim Neged. It should be Akum Canal. Upasak Dalid who neged biyata aretz as nishalem hakol. Vegamim neged arbir regalim hachad neged Pesach and so on and so forth. We'll skip next line. Vegimel who neged Sukkot shehu zekher. Okay, this is the point. Lehekef anane kavod shehayat talui bebinyan hamishkan ki yadua. So this is ki yadua. If you didn't know this, he's saying is that why do we build Sukkot? Zecher to remembrance of, memorial of the Anane HaKavod. Which Anane HaKavod? So the Gra tells us, because when the Jews left Egypt, they had Anane HaKavod, but when they sinned with the golden calf, the Anane HaKavod stopped. And when did Anane HaKavod come back? They came back. Well, we saw something about completing the Mishkan, but now listen to what he says. He says, "Uvizei turatz mashekshu lama anachnu osim sukkot b'tishrei." Obviously, he's aware of the question of the tour. Why do we have the b'tishrei kevin shehu neged hekef ananei kavod ha'ra'ui lasot b'nisan? Right, it should have been in Nisan when they first leave, and the ananei kavod go with them. Ki Nisan etchilat hekef ananim. It was during Nisan when the ananim were with them. Avon nireh lefi kishasu et ha'egel nistalku ha'ananim. When the Jews sinned with the golden calf, then the ananim disappeared. V'az lo chazru ad shehitchilu la'asot ha'mishkan. When did the ananim return? When they started to make the Mishkan. U'moshe yarad b'yom ha'kippurim. Moshe came down from the mountain, what day? Yom Kippur. U'v'morchara yom ha'kippurim v'yakel Moshe. Moshe gathered everyone together and said to them, "Vitziva Moshe amalechat haMishkan." V'zeya b'yiralof b'tishrei. On the 11th of Tishrei is when Moshe starts giving the instructions. V'ktiv, and it says, "Va'am hiviu od nidava baboker baboker." They brought more day by day, baboker baboker. That's shnei yamim. Harei yud gimel. That's yud bet yud gimel b'tishrei. Uv'yidal b'tishrei natzlu kol chacham lev mi'Moshe et hazahav.
So the Gra has a very specific cheshbon over here, calculation. When do the Jews start to build the Mishkan? On the 15th day of Tishrei. Va'az chazru anei kavod ulakach anu osim sukkot b'tetvav b'tishrei. And he says that's the reason why we have Sukkot. That Sukkot is not about the Anei HaKavod that took the Jews out of Egypt. It's about the Anei HaKavod that returned after the Jews ascended. When does it return, according to what the Gra says? It returned on the 15th day of Nisan, and that's why Sukkot, on Tishrei, and that's why Sukkot is on the 15th day of Tishrei. Now, just keeping this in mind for a second, when we saw before that in the Book of Maccabees, there's some kind of understanding that perhaps there's some kind of a connection between Chanukah and Sukkot, so we're just missing one point, and that is that. What's that point? Is what exactly is Sukkot? So now we understand that Sukkot is about the binyan of the Mishkan, and therefore this sensibility that, oh, we missed Sukkot this year, so now we need to make another holiday of Hanukkah, is not as far fetched as we would have thought before. Once we see this insight of the Gra, I want to make this even sharper, because there's a remarkable teaching of the Meshech Chachma. In source number 13, which is back in Parshat Mishpatim, it says, Shalosh regalim techogli b'shana, make for me three holidays of the year. Et chag ha-matzot tishmor shivat yamim tocha ha-matzot chasher tziviticha lemoed chodesh ha-aviv kivo yatzat mitrayim v'lo yiru panai rekam. First holiday is called chag ha-matzot, and when is it? It's in the spring. It's a spring holiday, which is interesting. Right? Pesach is a spring holiday, but why? It gives us the historical reason. What's the historical reason? Because we left in the spring. Then it says in Pasuk Tetzayin, V'chaga katsir bikurei ma'asech asher tizra basadeh, V'chaga asif b'tzeit ha-shana ba'asvacha et ma'asech min asadeh. Two other holidays, Chaga katsir v'chaga asif. What is Chaga katsir? Shavuot. What Chaga asif? Sukkot. But what did it forget to say? It forgot to give us any kind of historical. It only focused on the agricultural side of things. But that's a little strange, because when it came to Pesach, it did talk about the historical. So why speak about the historical when it talks about Pesach, but not speak about the historical by the other holidays? Later on, in Perek Lamed Dalet, it says, V'chag Shavuot ta'aseh lecha birkei ketzir chitim, V'chag asif tkufat ha-shana. Again, now what's interesting about Shmot Perek Kaf Gimel and Shmot Perek Lamed Dalet? Both of them take place prior to Perek Lamed Hei. What's Lamed Hei? Vayakel Moshe et Ha'am. That's where Moshe comes down and gathers the people and tells them about the building of the Mishkan. Both of these, Parshat Mishpatim, is before. Listen to the Meshech Chachma now. Source number 15. V'chag Asif, v'chen b'kitisa. There as well, it's only called Chag Asif. Lo kein b'dvarim, but later on in Sefer Devarim, it's called Ktiv Chag Sukkot. V'hatam al pi divrei hagra, what we just now read in Shir Hashirim, kishenitan luchot hashniim u'moshe yarad min hahar v'chazru ananei hakavod b'tetvav l'chodesh tishrei nitztavu al sukkot kiyadua. He said, prior to Moshe coming down, prior to building the Mishkan, there was no holiday of Sukkot. The holiday of Sukkot is only afterwards, when we're forgiven on Yom Kippur. Anything prior to that, you can't call it Chag Sukkot. So that's exactly the point of the Meshech Chachma, and he's basing himself on this Gra that we just now saw. Because what is the significance of Chag Sukkot? Chag Sukkot is when we start to build the Mishkan. That's when God forgave us. So it's so interesting then that within the book of Maccabees, that after we sinned and after we defiled the temple and after we did all these things, and now God has made up with us, and now we do the holiday of Sukkot again. That may not be as strange and completely foreign, independent from the holiday of Hanukkah, as maybe we would have thought a little while ago. Just two things about this. In Source 17, the Maharil says, Maharil is an ancient Ashkenazi book of Ashkenazi customs, Amu Mari Segel, Shira'ar Shirabo Maharash, that's Shalom Ben Yitzchak, his teacher, Hoya Misamein Hadapim L'mechitzot HaSukah, Aleph Bet Gimel, very strange halacha. I think a lot of us do this. It says that he used to put the signs on each wall of the sukkah to know which is the north and which is the south, which is the east and which is the west. So why would he do that? What's the practical reason for doing that? It's that you don't mess up. So listen to the way the shla, but he says that you shouldn't change them. Now, if this is just a practical thing, then why tell me that this is a minhag? Unless there's some kind of religious side to this. So listen to the way the Shla brings this in. And the Shla actually introduces two different things. Any of you ever notice that on a talit, on what theoretically is the top, they put something which is called a atara? Why? Why? So you can recognize your husband, sure. But Exactly. To know which is the tallit. So listen to the shla in source number 18. Be'inyan hanachat ha-tallit, regarding the making of a tallit, ru'ui shotan tzitziyot shebo rishona b'tzad rosh, shiyu la'olam l'tzad rosh. The ones which are on the top should always be on top. Kevin shezochul liot l'mala, because they merited to be on top. Ein ru'ui sheirdu mi ma'alatan. They should not lose their status of being near the head. The reason you put this on, to know which is the top and which is the bottom of this. That you should not switch the top and the bottom. That when the Yerushalmi says, this is how they built the Mishkan, they would write on each one, this is the north and this is the south. Is the east. Why? Because something which had the kedusha of being on the east is not the same kedusha as being on the south. Zeloshano sham amar rav ami vahakamta et mishkan kemishpato v'chiyish mishpat leitzim. Is there a law by itzim? So it says yes. Ella keresh shezachali natein bitzafon natein bitzafon laolam v'chein bedarom natein bedarom v'fichach roshmim aleim shelo yachlifenu u'kein matzati b'mahariel b'hilchot sukkah eich shor sherabu maharash haya misamein adapin l'mechitzot ha-sukkah alf begimul kedei l'rot seder amidatan shelo l'shano mishana l'shana. Which means, again, he's taking the exact law from building the Mishkan and applying to the sukkah. So you can say, okay, this is just some kind of a comparison. Or you can say, no, this is really the idea of building a sukkah underneath the kanfei shechina. The idea of building a sukkah is as if we're building for ourselves our own Mishkan or our own Beit HaMikdash. That's the concept of building the sukkah. So again, what I'm pointing out is that the holidays of Sukkot and the holidays of Hanukkah are not as far from one another as perhaps we would have imagined. Look at source 21 for a moment. Tanur Rabbanan, mitzvah Hanukkah ner ishu beito, right? Basic mitzvah is one per household. V'mahadrin nelekol echad v'chad. People who are more careful about it, each person in the house writes. V'mahadrin minahadrin beit shamay omrim yo rishon malikin shmona mikan ve'elech potchet v'holech. You start with eight and then you go down. U'beit hillel omrim yo rishon malik echad mikan ve'elech mosif v'holech. You go up in number. Amo'ula pligi beit trei amorai b'marava. There were two rabbis who debated about this. Rabbi Yosi bar Avin, Rabbi Yosi bar Zvida. Chad amar tamid debeit shamay keneged yomim nechnasim, v'tamid debeit hillel keneged yomim yotzim. Do you count the day, you know, the days to come, or the days that already left? You count up, count down. V'chad amar tamid debeit shamay. What's the reason of beit shamay? Keneged parei hachag, that we do it the same way as the korbanot which was brought on Sukkot. On Sukkot, we start with X amount, and then each day we go down a number of the korbanot. Which were. So I can ask you, and what in the world does the korbanot on Sukkot have to do with Hanukkah? So now we understand that Hanukkah and Sukkot are far more related than we would have thought. The time of debate Hillel, the ma'alin bekodesh ve'ein moridin, that something's allowed to be made more holy, but you don't make something less holy, which is also interesting because it's basically the same law that we just now saw regarding the walls of the Mishkan. Something that merited to be on that wall cannot be shifted over to a down level if it was on a holier part of what's considered to be the Mishkan. Source number 19, the celebrations of Sukkot. Sukkot is a happy day. Shevach v'hoda'ah also. Mi shelorat simchat beit ha-shoah, lorat simcha b'yamav. Now just notice the things that we've never noticed before about Sukkot. Minorot shel zahav hayusham. Ve'arbas filim shel zahav b'rashim, ve'arbas filim kol achad v'chav. Arbi yiladim pirchei kunav yedeyim kadim shel shemen, shemei ve'esrim log. Shehim atilim l'kol sefer v'sefer. They would use that to make the wicks. And every single household in Yerushalayim was lit up from the Simchat Beit HaShoeva. Chasidim HaChimasa Yimurakdim Bifneim Ba'avukot Shel Or Shebiyadeim. And so on and so forth. The next source, verse 20, tells of Shimon ben Gamliel, Kishar Sameich Simcha Beit Shoah, Yo Notel Shmona Avokot Shalor. Which means, all these things we never noticed the aspect of light, and we never noticed the aspect of oil, or we never noticed the aspect of, there's a lot with eight as well, which I didn't get into. But we never noticed all of these aspects of Sukkot, but that's what I'm pointing out. Sukkot is itself, the essence of Sukkot, there's two parts of it. There's the agricultural part, but then there's this other holy part. The agricultural part is probably more about the Arba Minim, right? That's the agriculture. But there's another part, and that's the Sukkah. So every year we build a Sukkah, and as we're building the Sukkah, it's as if we're building the Mishkan again. Every year when they celebrated the Simchat Beit HaShoevah, there are aspects of celebrating light, and all of Jerusalem is filled up with light. So it's interesting that Hanukkah, which then becomes this quote-unquote replacement for the Sukkot, which was missed, it's not just that they happen to have missed Sukkot that year. There's a whole other aspect to it. You know, it's interesting, Josephus, who, by the way, if you look at, let's say, on Wikipedia, look about Sukkot, they'll say, oh, the rabbi said the miracle of light, and it wasn't, and they'll give you a very, very, very late date for it. Josephus, who's fairly early, says that Hanukkah, it's like Adam Sandler, he says, Hanukkah is the festival of lights. That's what he writes. He goes, but I don't know why. That's more interesting, because Josephus generally, anything about the Beit HaMikdash has very, very good traditions. He was a Kohen, and he worked in the Beit HaMikdash. Anything he says about the Beit HaMikdash, you have to think 15 times before you reject what he says, because I don't know if there's anything that he says which is wrong about the Beit HaMikdash itself. I'm not saying that everything that Josephus says is right, but when he talks about the Beit HaMikdash, be very, very careful, because unlike most of us, he was actually there, and he worked as a Kohen, he served there, and so on. So he tells us, Hanukkah is called the holiday of lights, because I don't know why it's called the holiday of lights. So again, to me, that's absolutely fascinating, because here we have a second temple source that tells us that this is called the holiday of lights. Now we go back to everything that we've considered today, and we realize that Hanukkah itself is the Chanukat HaBayit. It is the Chanukat of the Beit HaMikdash. And for that matter, I'd be willing to say is that, especially understanding the verses in Ezra as we understood them, that there was a lack of a miracle of light when the second Beit HaMikdash was built. Now there was this understanding that something happened, and that small miracle of light meant that God is still with us. Of course, everything that happened subsequently during the second Beit HaMikdash, during the time of the second temple, is complicated. The complication starts with the Hashmonaim themselves and goes on to every single aspect of it. And again, the simple kinds of questions that come up. If I really talk about the war, I'll give you the fourth reason. If I really talk about the war and talk about the greatness of having rebellion, how smart is that? Again, which age do you want to pick? Talking about a rebellion and talking about soldiers becomes something which is very dangerous as we move on in history. And for that matter, let's say it's after the Bar Kokhba rebellion, and you see the dangers of rebellion. You see what happens when people get massacred. Do you then, again, talk about the rebellion? In modern Israel, suddenly the Hashmonaim became the heroes again. In modern Israel, suddenly, oh, listen, you go looking for a history of Jewish war heroes, you have to go pretty far back. You have to go, again, you go back to Bar Kokhba, even though it didn't work out all that well. You had a couple of victories along the way. You have to go all the way, if you don't want to go to biblical times, you have to go all the way back to the Hashmonaim to find Jews who were successful soldiers, and therefore we go back. And again, I said in the beginning that you read the story of Hanukkah in different way at different times, depending on what your perspective is at that particular time. Chazal, I don't want to say we're guilty of that, but Chazal certainly did this. And therefore, at different times, it may have been looked at differently. And again, I'll say, because of this complication in terms of the Hashmonaim. But the very core of Hanukkah seems to be, again, the Book of Maccabees talks about Sukkot. What does Sukkot have to do with anything? Well, Sukkot has everything to do with the idea that we can sin, be guilty of, again, taking Har Sinai, which is really the core of the Beit HaMikdash, taking Har Sinai and defiling it by building an Egel Azav, and nonetheless, that the clouds of glory can come back. How does it come back? It comes back when we start to build the Mishkan. The building of the Mishkan is like the building of the Sukkah. When we, our own Kohanim, again, just think about it. The Kohanim who serve to bring pigs into the Beit HaMikdash and defile the Beit HaMikdash during the Hanukkah time, if you look for a biblical source which is close to that, that's like the day that the Egel was made. It's this defiling of the most holy place. So now, how does this get fixed? Well, the Sukkah is the sign of it being fixed. Yom Kippur is a sign of forgiveness. Yom Kippur is a sign that God is not going to destroy us. But Sukkot is that now we can go and live together again. Yom Kippur means that we're not going to get divorced. Sukkot means we're going to live together again. That's what Sukkot means. So if Sukkot means that we can That's why Sukkot is the beginning of the building of the Mishkan. That's why Sukkot seems to be absolutely connected to Chanukah. And then, as I said, when you start looking, and there are more, I did not point out all the references. When you start looking at the Gemara and start to make references to, oh, the Parei HaChag. What is the Parei HaChag? No, no, that is actually a much better argument than any of us ever would have considered before, because the Parei HaChag, which are brought in Sukkot, have everything to do with Chanukah. Which means Chanukah is the Chanukat HaMizbeach. It is the consecration of the Mizbeach of Bayit Shem. At this point, they felt God is really with us, which all the old-time Kohanim didn't necessarily feel when they actually built it, because they remembered what it was like when God was really with us. And now the rabbis, Lashana Acheret, they began to contemplate, hold it, that was not a natural thing. What do you mean? The oil, the fact they found the oil, right? The one thing which is still pure, right? It still had the seal of the Kohen Gadol, and it lasted for one day. Now that itself is unusual. But it lasted a second day, and a third day, a fourth day, a fifth day, sixth day, seventh day, eighth day. How does oil last so long? And I'm going to say it again, that as it happens, it doesn't necessarily generate the same kind of excitement, but when they think about it, no, that's the important thing, because the oil represents that God is still with us. It represents the Shekhinah is still with us. And now what's really interesting is that instead of saying, so now let's light it in every single shul, in every single Beit Knesset, in every single place of worship should be holy, it's Chazal then say, light it in every single house. Every single home is holy. Maybe Ner Ishu Beito represents the idea that it was once a civil war and two brothers fought and killed one another. Now it's Ner Ishu Beito. One house will be holy. One house, one candle will represent the entire family. Again, on the basic level. Mahadrin, that everybody lights it, at least according to the Ashkenazim. But it's saying that the Shekhinah rests in every Jewish home. And that it's not just the Beit HaMikdash, it's that every single home is there. So the real miracle of Chanukah is not just that a long time ago that there was a light that lasted for 8 days. The real miracle of Chanukah is that we still feel God's presence with us. The reality is that it was a light that was lit and it lasted for 2,500 years.